I'm Grace Cavalieri. We are at the Library of Congress with Lucille Clifton.
Another poem was about, I live near the Potomac, I believe it is. And it's I never remember whether it's the Potomac or the Patuxent, but I live in St. Mary's County. I live on a river. And in thinking about that, people were very impressed. All my friends are very into the Whitecaps and all of that. Well, I've always lived near water, but I haven't ever thought about it much. And suddenly one day I was looking and the Whitecaps were coming in and everybody was very excited. And I started thinking about the Whitecaps coming in looked like nappy hair. Looked like white nappy hair walking on, you know, underwater, walking towards shore. So, this is called Wind on the St. Mary's River, January 2002. It is the elders trying to return, sensing the coast is near and they will soon be home again. They have walked under two oceans and too many seas, the nap of their silver hair whipping as the wind sings out to them, this way, this way. And they come rising steadily, not swimming exactly, toward shore, toward redemption. But the wind dies down, and they sigh and still and descend, while we watch from our porches, not remembering their names, not calling out Jeremiah, Fannie Lou, Geronimo, but only Whitecaps on the water. Mm. Look. Whitecaps.
Mm, what a thing. What a thing.
That's funny.
Yeah, that you should have seen your ancestors. Because water, as you say, being really living in Baltimore, who lives near the water, but your water is pervasive in all the work. Let's hear some more poetry. We're at the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. That's Lucille Clifton over there.
This is a poem about, I had a sister who was a prostitute. And she was wonderful, you know. And look, I am not the only person who had a sister who was a prostitute. I am the one who talks about it.
And writes poems about it.
Yes, because why not? And this is called Here Rests.
I love
this. My sister died, years back. Here rests my sister Josephine, born July in 29 and dead these 15 years, who carried a book on every stroll. When Daddy was dying, she left the streets and moved back home to tend him. Her pimp came too, her Diamond Dick, and they would take turns reading the Bible aloud through the house. When you poem this, and you will, she would say, remember the book of Job. Happy birthday and hope to you, Josephine, one of the East's most wanted. May heaven be filled with literate men. May they bed you with respect.
Terrific.
She was quite something.
What an elegy.
I hope so. She was...
What was the pimp like?
Oh, he was nice. They once before... Now, this was in the 50s when I was going to come to Howard University. I went to Howard in the 50s. I did not graduate. And they took me to lunch once. I was 16, and I had never been away from home. And they sat me down and had a list of places in D.C. that if they heard I appeared there, they would be pretty angry and they would get me about it. And so I never went to any of those places because I was pretty sure they'd know.
Ha!
They were
watching out for you.
Yes. Well, we were family, you know.
Tell us about Mama when you were at Howard and... You made that phone call. I just love your mother's story. So tell us a mama story.
I mean, of course, everybody's mother was a saint except mine was. I should say that my mother dropped dead when she was 44 years old, a month before my oldest daughter was born, my oldest child was born. But when I went to Howard, I had never been away from home. I won a full scholarship. And, oh, they were very proud, though they had no idea where Howard was. And... when I went there, we were so poor, and I had taken my grandmother's chest, her like trunk, and I was embarrassed by it. It was tied with ropes, so I had to put it in the basement, and then I would unpack at night so people wouldn't see this trunk. And when we got off the train, several of us from the neighborhood, gentleman, I think he was a sophomore, and at that time you were met at the train station by people, by upper-class people. And he came to my friend, her name was Betty Dixon. Betty, if you're listening, you might remember this. And he said, "Oh, you're so cute. You'll really last here. You'll have a good time." And he looked at me and said, "And you must be her mother." And I thought, I was always myself. And so what I did was say that I hate this place, and as soon as I eat, I'm going home.
Absolutely.
But I insisted on lunch first.
Absolutely.
And then when I got there, I saw wealthy African Americans. I had never seen them before. And I called home and I said, "Mama, they got matching robes and slippers." And she said, "Baby, it's the good life."
I cherish
that. That's what she wanted.
Baby,
for me, the
this
good
is
life.
The good life. You hit pay dirt. You're in a dorm with people with matching slippers.
Yes, oh, that was exciting.
Well, bless you, Mama. I think you're probably listening in because you're the one that made Lucille say free and, let's see what you said, empowered and free.
Mm,
that's
yes.
What she made you feel like mm-hmm. at 5 years old.
Yes, I went to, I was always, our family, my father and the kids were always Baptist. My mother was what people call a holy roller. And she would get happy and carry on, and my brother and I were terribly embarrassed most of the time. And I was supposed to do a recitation at church. And I think I was just tired of reciting. I was the smart one. Do you know how in small churches you all have labels? And in our family I had a label. My sister was the pretty one. My younger sister, I was the smart one. My brother was the boy. And my older sister was the one who was a prostitute actually. She was gone off by then. And I went to the front of the church when my name was called, and I really just suddenly didn't feel like it. Do you know? I was tired. I didn't want to remember anything. And I stood there quietly, and people were muttering. The ladies of the church were saying, "Make her do it. Why isn't she saying anything? Come on, Lou. Come on, honey." And my mother marched from the back of the church, and she didn't go to that church. She was sanctified. You know, this was a Baptist church. My mother marched up the aisle to me and took my hand and turned around and said, she don't have to do anything she don't want to do. And I remember thinking, wow, is that true? That's wonderful.
Permission at last.
She don't have to do anything she don't
and
want to do.
And you really went through something. For a moment, you said you changed inside. You mm-hmm. felt suddenly free
suddenly,
and
maybe,
empowered.
Maybe this was true.
Ah.
Maybe I could, I didn't have to do what I didn't want to do. And so I think, well, I have two really favorite sayings. One of them is from Bessie Smith, who was, I was not built for size, I was built for comfort. And the other is from Geraldine, Flip Wilson as Geraldine, who said once, "Even when I do things I don't want to do, I only do them because I want to."
Oh.
And that just has kept me going. That
well,
was
she
a variation.
Has blessed your boat early
she
on,
has.
Didn't
she? Did. She was a great blessing to me.
Well, we're having the luck of hearing a premiere, the manuscript that is not yet even published. Boa is sniffing at your heels to get it, right?
I hope so.
And it's called Mercy.
Mm-hmm.
And please, please stay with that title. Because
oh,
that is
so.
An all-encompassing
title. I think that
title.
Is the
that
title.
Is the title of the year.
A couple of friends who thought there would be other titles, but that is, it is Mercy.
The power that one word can have.
Mm-hmm.
So let's have a little more of that.
Well, this is a poem called Cancer, and I have had cancer several times. And anyway, cancer. The first time the dreaded word bangs against your eyes, so that you think you may have heard it, but what you know is that the room is twisting crimson on its hinge, and all the other people there are dolls watching from their dollhouse chairs. The second time there is a swoosh, as if your heart has fallen down a well, and shivers in the water there, trying to not drown. The third time, and you are so tired, so tired, and you nod your head and smile and walk away from the angel uniforms, the blood machines, and you enter the nearest movie house and stand in the last aisle, staring at the screen with your living eyes.
Mm. Your last lines are killer lines.
Oh, I like last lines.
Boy, they come together.
I like last lines.
Let's hear more.
Well, this is a very difficult poem. This is a poem that was very hard for me. But I don't say no to poems. And I do believe that two things poetry can do. One is to say to the audience, you are not alone. And that seems to me very important in traveling the country. And I've read in every state and then in some other countries. I have found Americans to be so very lonely. We are so lonely as people. And to have someone say you are not alone is important. And also I think poetry can speak for those who have not yet found their voice to speak. And I know that there are a lot of people in this country who have been abused by those who purported to love them, perhaps. Anyway, now this was a hard poem. I think I can read it, though. Mercy. How grateful I was when he decided not to replace his fingers with his thing, though he thought about it, was going to, but mumbled, maybe I shouldn't do that, and didn't do that. And I was so grateful then and now. Grateful. How sick I am. How mad.
What a poem. That is the title poem of your book.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Mercy. You know, mercy on all of us that do anything to anyone, who have it done to us,
mm-hmm.
who forget
on all
it,
of us.
And pretty mad about it anyway.
Mm-hmm. And not just angry mad,
no.
but mad, you know, a bit.
Mad.
Yes. Yes.
And I think Oprah has done so much sitting there with her beauty, talking mm-hmm. about her beginnings, and Maya Angelou too. And everyone who has the courage to push back the border one more inch so we can say one more thing, so one more child can know she's not alone.
Mm-hmm. That seems important.
Oh.
I think we have a tendency to believe in our country that bad things happen to people who are in a pathologic situation, something like that. But I've read poems about abuse to, I remember some years back, to a group of faculty wives at Princeton. And they were furious. They did not like me particularly because I seemed to not hate my father. And I, you know, it's a very complicated thing, very complicated. But hate doesn't solve anything.
Mm. Except to eat you up.
Yes, because the hater doesn't have the face glue, and you're walking around with all of this, which does not mean that I think everything's okay. I do not.
Or you would not have written that poem.
Right.
Or you would not.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is the act mm-hmm. of salvation.
Because a bad thing happened. And a bad thing happens a lot. And we must go on realizing that the world is full of bad things quite often.
I believe in redemption.
Oh, I do too.
And that's what that poem believes in.
I do believe in that.
Yeah. I think that manuscript may be very important because that seems to be the theme.
Maybe so.
Redemption. Yeah, let's hear another, and I'll tell you.
Okay. Good.
You know, I always love to tell you what to do.
Yes, I've noticed that. Well, this is a poem. Oh, here's a poem for W.S. Merwin is a friend, and he's just a dear guy. And he was at St. Mary's College, and a student asked him what he did all day, which I think is a very interesting question. Why do you ask him that? And he started saying, well, I do so and so and so and so, and then I walk the blind dog. And I thought, whoa, I know a poem. Do you see how you perked up? I know a poem, but I hear one. And so I did ask about his dog, and William loves dogs, first of all, loves his dogs. And he has a black lab called Muku. Which Muku means the dark of the moon, you know, just before there is new moon. And she's blind, and he walks her. And thinking of that, well, walking the blind dog. Then he walks the blind dog, Muku, named for the dark of the moon, out to the park where she can smell the other dogs and hear their yips, their puppy dreams. Her one remaining eye is starlit, though it has no sight, and in its bright blue crater is a vision of the world. All travelers who feel the way from here to there and back again, who follow through the deep grass the ruff of breeze, rustling her black coat, his white hair, both of them poets, trusting the blind road home.
Great last line again. Does he like that poem?
Do you know, I have not sent it to him. I know it's awful. I'm so sorry, William.
Oh.
I have to send it.
He has to hear it here?
I could send it, I know.
Really? But you are going to?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I keep saying that, and then we all know how lazy I truly am.
Just with 10,000 things to do every
I keep
minute.
Saying, well, there are no stamps. If people just bring you stamps, you'd be able to do these things.
That looks like a different shape for you, that poem.
This a prose is a poem, prose poem, and I never do that, but this poem wanted to be that, and so there it is. This was a poem about a place in... I'm very interested in history, and the whole history of a thing. And St. Mary's County is a very historical part of the state of Maryland, certainly. It is the mother county of Maryland.
What year?
Oh, I have no
idea. Like 1600 or something.
Yes, because it was founded for religious toleration, the Carroll family. The Lord's Calvert. And there's a plantation there called Mulberry Fields. And what really was interesting to me was that Mulberry Fields had a slave graveyard. And it's always interesting to me to go and try to find the graveyards of the slaves. They often are lost because the markers, if there were the markers, are done in wood, and of course they rot. Someone asked me once, I said I was going to try to find some slave graves, and they said, oh, do they have them? And it occurred to me that everybody dies. They didn't just throw you out in the yard, you know. Anyway, slaves are something we don't talk about, you know, but it's negating a history of my family anyway. And the thing about Mulberry Fields that's interesting is they had rocks and stones as markers there at Mulberry Fields. But at a certain point, they were taken up and used to build a wall around the big house, and some of them were used in recreating the state house.
I wish that was just a metaphor, but it's not.
I'm
the stones
not.
Are there.
They are there, the rocks and stones. Anyway, Mulberry Fields. They say that they thought the field was wasting, and so they gathered the marker rocks and stones and piled them into a barn. They say that the rocks were shaped, some of them scratched with triangles and other forms. They must have been trying to invent some new language, they say. The rocks went to build that wall there guarding the manor, and some few were used for the state house. Crops refused to grow. I say the stones had an old tongue, and it was called eternity and pointed toward the river. I say that after that collection, no pillow in the big house dreamed. I say that somewhere under here molders one called Alice, whose great-grandson is old now, too, and refuses to talk about slavery. I say that at the master's table only one plate is set for supper. I say no seed can flourish on this ground, once planted, then forsaken. Wild berries warm a field of bones. Bloom how you must, I say.
That I say does it, Lucille. That I say.
Really?
What beautiful glue. You know why? Here is the thing. And why it's a prose poem, which is very interesting to me, because as you get more involved in history and more involved in history, you have more facts you want to explain. You just want to say more things. But with the intended narrative, if you come to the poem, as you know, with stuff you want to say, it kills the poem. So how you get around that is by putting yourself in the landscape and taking kind of the flack of the poem by saying, I say, I say, I say. That takes away all the expositional problem.
And then the they say, which is what...
Yeah.
Because it was interesting to me, because that is true, that the man who was a preservationist on that land, and what I learned, of course, was that preservationists are interested in preserving places, not people, and not the stories. They want the stories of the place, but the stories of the people are what is interesting to me always. And he said that on the rocks and stones there were marks and triangles and things, and they must have been trying to invent a language.
Aww.
And I'm thinking, my Lord, these are rituals. These are African kinds of ritual markings, and they mean all kinds of things because you can see them, some of them still, on the wall.
You can.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe that's why you went to St. Mary's.
I've often wondered.
Of all places. I mean, you were Columbia. You were, they were bidding on you for all over the country. You were in three colleges at Duke. Mm-hmm. But you took the chair at St. Mary's, mm-hmm. and you are unearthing the stones there.
I want to
you
tell
are.
The story.
And I remember sitting in the State House with you when you were saying people were lynched here. Somebody was lynched in this house. I'm not feeling so good. And you do feel them rising up out of the ground.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. My neighbors say that now they can never look out and see the Whitecaps without saying, oh, the elders are coming.
The ancestors. Mm-hmm. One more here.
Well, oh, this is sort of fun. This is funny, I think. When I was a girl, now, you know, I think you might have seen them, Grace. I have a lot of videos. I mean, I'm into videos.
Yes.
And they are eclectic, as am I like to think. That is to say, I've got all the Shakespeare things and the poetry things. And then I've got a great collection of Godzilla, who's one of my heroes, and Mothra, who's quite wonderful, and all those people as well. And I used to really like the Phantom. Do you remember the Phantom?
Yeah.
And all of them. And you see, this is something that people don't talk about. As a young, at that time, called colored girl, I felt very safe around the monsters, because they only went for white girls. Now, probably nobody noticed that, but I have been a noticing sort of person my whole life. You know?
Come to think of it.
See?
Oh, that is so funny.
Anyway, this is called The Phantom. In his purple mask, his purple bodysuit, lived with a wolf called Devil. The village believed him immortal, the ghost who walks, though he was only a man. I would save up to go watch him in his cave of skulls, his penthouse in the city. He would fall in love with a white girl, like all the heroes and monsters did. I was a little black girl. After the show, I would walk home wondering, what is the name of his country?
Mm.
What is the name of mine?
Mm.
What would he feel if he saw me?
Oh!
But that's sort of fun, and it's not something people talk about.
It's I say, I say, I say. It is terrific. I
Thank
love
you.
That poem.
Thank you. Well, you might like this book, Grace.
Yeah, Mercy.
Mm-hmm.
How did that word come to you? You know why the simplest words, like Richard Wilbur said, sometimes love. Mm-hmm. Is the best word you can say.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I love you. Three Think little silks is the most important thing you could say. But we tend to feel it's trivializing mm-hmm. to use words like that. So how did Mercy visit you?
Well, first of all, it's based on the I never know whether it's epigram or epigraph, and I don't care so
really?
Much. But it was based on something. This book is dedicated to my daughter who died. And there was something, a line I had in a different poem in a different book called The Only Mercy is Memory. And this book is something about memory.
Mm.
And so Mercy seemed right. And once I could say it to myself, it did seem to be the name of the book.
That is your line?
The only mercy is memory. The only hell is regret.
You know,
but
that this, should be in...
It is the only...
Oh,
it, is the
it will
only
begin the book? Oh,
memory,
good.
Excepting that a friend said I shouldn't put Lucille Clifton under there because that's just too much.
I'll put it in.
Quoting myself.
Is it okay if I do?
If you want to. But as I told my kids, I mean, I said the cool thing. Why can't I claim it, you know? But anyway.
We have to say a word about your children's books before we get to a final poem because there are about 16 of them.
I think,
you think 18?
Yeah.
Okay.
Something like that.
And do you have fun doing that? Do you love that?
I do. I have been asked which I prefer. I would say that I don't think preference is the right idea, but writing for children is important. And when I first started, my first children's book came out the same month in the same year that my first poetry did.
I didn't
They were both
that.
November 1969.
Wow.
And
what was your first book?
Some of the Days of Everett Anderson. Mm.
And Everett Anderson has had quite a literary life.
Yes. Oh, there are 7 books, and I'm sure one day I'm going to write, you know, words at the funeral of Everett Anderson.
You have to say what your grandchild said when you called.
Oh, that's the grandchild that I
in
called
California.
And said, now this grandchild had been, the teacher had been showing him Everett Anderson books.
By Lucio Clifton.
Yes, and she'd say things like, look at this, look what I have. Does this mean something to you? No. You know, don't you think this is wonderful I have this? No, it's nice, you know. And so this one day I called, and his name is Dakota, and it's okay, Cody, you were very young. I said, hello, who's this? And he said, this is Dakota Brown, who's this? And I said, this is Lucille Clifton. And he said, oh, and I said, Cody, it's Grandma. And he said, Grandma, are you Lucille Clifton?
Oh, that is my
and
best
I said, well, I
story.
Am.
You know,
hey,
so
and where's
much
your
in...
mother? I want to speak to her.
Really? But you know, there's so much in that, because there's a very serious fact that when we send out our image ahead of us, mm-hmm. it really is quite different from the being, isn't it?
Yes.
And he picked up on that. Hey, here's the image,
yes.
and here's my grandmother.
Here's my grandmother.
And how do these things match?
Indeed, because the older child at one point, his teacher, my oldest grandson, his teacher called home and said that she wanted to talk with my daughter because he was making things up, because he was saying that Lucille Clifton was related to her.
Oh.
And so she went to school, and the woman said, well, you know, his fantasy life and all of that, and he has this fantasy thing, and what can we do? And she looked at, and my daughter looked at her and said, well, I don't know. Lucille Clifton is my mother. And she was shocked.
Wouldn't but you love to have been there to see that?
I would have laughed.
We're going to have a closing poem.
This is, to me, a poem that was done as an assignment. I gave the assignment to my workshop class, and I try to write with them sometimes when I'm doing that. And someone had said, do you think you can write a poem about anything? And I said, sure. And this is a poem that my editor at BOA likes a lot. And I hadn't thought of it that way, but it's called Three Potatoes. And it's because I said, sure, you can write about potatoes. You can write something wonderful. Three Potatoes, and it's for Jeannie who asked the question. Begin with the majesty of three kings rising over the wilderness. Add three wise men, astrologers interpreting the sky. Follow their watch to three worlds meeting, and the line between them thin as gold. Three monarchs kneeling, their eyes downcast. Three donkeys nuzzling the sleeping babe. And three potatoes, their naked eyes glistening in a field.
The inimitable voice of Lucille Clifton. She holds, among many other awards, the National Book Award for her new and selected poems, Blessing the Boats. That's published by BOA. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The series is brought to you by the Witter Binner Foundation for Poetry and the Humanities Council of Washington, D.C. This program is produced by Forest Woods Media. Post-production is by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the motion picture, broadcasting, and recorded sound division of the Library of Congress. Our engineer is Brad McCoy. I'm Grace Cavalieri.